This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending Friday, the 8th of January, 2021. Hello, and a very warm welcome to you for this week's edition of the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper, where we will read extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle. Now, I'm Peter Lydiard, your presenter for today, and I'm joined this week by Richard Martin.
Hello.
Who will help me read through the various items from this week's Hampshire Chronicle. Our editors this week are Liz and Gordon Legg. Well, first, our regular notices. If you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings of the Talking Newspaper or the magazine, or if you have a problem with a recording you've received from us, please telephone Liz Legrise 01962 861 229. That is 01962 861 229. And just to remind you that you can use the buttons on your box to move on from an item before it finishes or back to any of the tracks that you want to listen to again. And if you are having problems with your box, which you have been playing this recording, please make sure you've plugged it into the mains and have it fully charged. And for those of you with computers or tablets, I'm sure that you will realise that, as well as using the memory stick in your box, you can also access the weekly recording of the Chronicle through our website, which is www.winchestertalkingnews.com. Over there you can either listen to it off the website, or you can download the recording to listen to later, or you can even plug your memory stick into the USB port on your computer. OK, so on to the main headlines for this week. As you would expect, they are both about COVID. The headings are county locked down again and COVID surge forces operations delay. Richard, could you read us one of the headline stories, please?
Yes, indeed. Thank you. The trust which runs Winchester Hospital has been forced to make the difficult decision to postpone some planned operations due to a surge in COVID patients. Hampshire Hospital's NHS Foundation Trust, which also operates Basingstoke and Andover hospitals, has said that it is under increasing pressure due to the rise in the number of people who've tested positive for COVID-19 who need hospital care. In a statement to the Chronicle, Chief Executive Alex Whitfield said that cancellations are being done in a phased way, with as much as possible being maintained. However, she continued, over the coming days it's likely an increasing number of our patients will be affected. Those who are impacted by this decision will be contacted individually. Those not contacted should continue to attend as normal. As of Monday morning, the Trust was treating 163 COVID patients, 57 at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital and 106 at Basingstoke, and an increase of 41 patients since Wednesday, December the 30th. At the peak of the pandemic in April, the highest number of patients in Hampshire hospitals with COVID was 148. The figures have gradually been creeping up again since early October. Miss Whitfield said, "Our hospitals are busy, but we have plans in place to cope with an increase in activity, including redeploying staff where necessary and making the difficult decision to postpone some planned operations in a phased way, with as much as possible being maintained. Cancer and other urgent operations and as much planned care as possible are continuing to go ahead, as is all emergency care. Make no mistake, your NHS will be here if you need us. Our staff have worked tirelessly over the last 2 years to provide the best care to everyone who needs our help, both with and without COVID, and they will continue to do so as we look forward to a challenging couple of weeks." While the Trust has said cancer operations will continue, concerns have been raised by the support organisations. Rachel Bilsby-Grass, Wessex Cancer Trust's chief executive, says this represents further uncertainty for cancer patients. She continued, "The NHS is having to make difficult decisions to cope with the increasing pressure caused by COVID. The past year was incredibly difficult for anyone who experienced delays to their cancer diagnosis and treatment, and the latest news will undoubtedly add to the uncertainty and anxiety many cancer patients are feeling. We urge anyone in this situation to speak to their doctors and ensure their treatment is considered on an individual basis and that they understand the reasons why any treatment has been postponed. Kruti Shroti, Cancer Research UK's head of policy, said, "It's extremely concerning to hear that cancer surgery is being delayed in some parts of the country, and this shows just how much the NHS is struggling to cope. We know NHS staff are doing everything they can to protect services and deliver urgent cancer care. During the first wave, the independent sector enabled some cancer surgery to continue, so it's vital that this option remains available for NHS use. Ultimately, lowering COVID cases is the answer to take the pressure off the NHS, which is why we can all play our part. To those who are experiencing delays and cancellations, we understand how incredibly hard this is, and we're doing all we can to support the NHS to protect cancer services. Anyone who thinks they might have symptoms of cancer, please go and see your GP. The NHS is still open to you." Dr. Sonia Babanarayan, Associate Medical Director of the British Heart Foundation, said, "The NHS is working on overdrive to prioritise all urgent COVID and non-COVID care. At the same time, we must not lose sight of the people with heart conditions whose planned treatment has been delayed. Surgery and other invasive procedures to treat heart disease are not luxuries that people can easily go without. Delaying them can cost lives. The significant backlog of people needing cardiovascular treatment will keep growing as COVID-19 cases soar. This may only be the tip of the iceberg, as the true scale of this disruption to cardiovascular health is still unknown. The moment the current crisis abates, we need to urgently address the backlog of people waiting for treatment before it becomes too late for some. To do this, hospitals will inevitably need more and more ongoing investment in cardiovascular care. Hampshire Hospitals is encouraging people to follow the guidelines and look after yourselves."
Thank you, Richard. The second headline story is headed, "County Locked Down Again." Residents are being urged to stay home as the country goes into a third national lockdown in a bid to stop the spread of COVID-19. In a televised speech on Monday, the Prime Minister announced a new lockdown for England as the number of coronavirus cases continues to rise. People have been told to leave home only to go to work if they cannot work from home, to exercise, to buy necessities, to seek medical help, and to escape domestic abuse. Primary and secondary schools, as well as colleges, will move to online learning, but remain open for vulnerable pupils and children of key workers. Prime Minister Boris Johnson said, "We should remain conscious of the timetable ahead. But if our understanding of the virus doesn't change dramatically once again, if the rollout of the vaccine programme continues to be successful, if deaths start to fall as the vaccine takes effect, and if everyone plays their part by following the rules, then I hope we can steadily move out of lockdown, reopening schools after the February half term. Those deemed clinically extremely vulnerable will also have to start shielding again." The news comes as the new variant of COVID-19 spreading across the country is believed to be between 50 and 70% more transmissible than the original one. Residents across Hampshire have been urged to follow the rules. Councillor Keith Manns, leader of Hampshire County Council, said, "Over the past 7 years, we have seen the number of positive cases rise substantially. This is of huge concern. Now more than ever, we must work together to keep ourselves, our loved ones and our communities safe." Councillor Lucille Thompson, leader of Winchester City Council, added, "I am sure that the news of another lockdown is disappointing for many across our district. And as with the first lockdown, we will be working to continue to provide services to our residents and businesses. We hope that by working together, we urge all residents to comply fully with the current restrictions, the purpose of the national lockdown, to protect lives and take pressure off local NHS services whilst the rollout of the vaccine takes place, can be realised." MPs across the county have reacted to the announcement of a new lockdown. Steve Bryan, MP, said, "When Hampshire went into Tier 4 on Boxing Day, I said if this was about getting ahead of the curve, it would be wise to put the whole country into lockdown. Then, because few doubted, that's where we will end up in January. Truth is, the virus has outpaced everyone across the world, and the new variant leaves our government with absolutely no choice. But whichever way you look at this, it's a disaster for our economy and our society. The thing that is different this time and promises to end the ruinous cycle of lockdown and release is the vaccine. But unless we see a nationwide programme that has the ambition to match the challenge, that promise, that promise will elude us. And 2021 will be a lot like 2020. I am pressing ministers at every opportunity, publicly and privately, to publish that vaccination roadmap and clarify exactly what supply we actually have when, because literally everything now rests on that. Personally, I think schools, certainly primary schools and older settings for exam cohorts, should be open the month with rigorous testing and priority vaccination for teachers and support staff. But it seems that decision has been made in the other direction." Mearne Valley MP Flick Drummond said, "I know this is deeply disappointing for pupils, parents and businesses across the Mearne Valley. The NHS is rapidly scaling up its vaccine capacity, and in this dark moment we are finally in a position to start rolling back this pandemic as more and more people receive vaccinations. It will take time, as the PM has said, but it is happening right now, and this means there is an end to the terrible time the whole world has endured for more than 9 months. The middle of February will be a crucial moment. We now know there are rocky times ahead. I can only ask people to please go the final mile and keep to these new rules. It will save lives." The Winchester district had been in Tier 4 since Boxing Day, meaning that non-essential businesses have been closed over what would have been a busy period for both the retail and hospitality industries. This was highlighted on New Year's Eve by police officers patrolling the city centre. Winchester cops posted on Twitter, "Winchester city centre has never looked so quiet on New Year's Eve. Thank you to everyone who has done their bit and stayed at home this evening. We can confirm there are currently more foxes than people on Winchester High Street." Yeah. On Tuesday, Chancellor Rishi Sunak unveiled a £4.6 billion support packages for businesses across the UK, dealt another crippling blow by enforced closures. It includes one-off top-up grants worth up to £9,000 for firms in the retail, hospitality and leisure sectors to help nurse them through to the spring. Ross McNally, Hampshire Chamber Chief Executive and Executive Chairman, said, "Most businesses will recognise that tougher measures are needed, given the surge of infections we are seeing across the country. However, return to a stay-at-home instruction and virtual-only school tuition means that, as with March 2020 lockdown, parents with children will find it more difficult to play their full part in the workforce. Thousands of chamber members are already experiencing huge pressures and now have to brace themselves for yet more pain." Winchester BID Executive Director Paul Spencer said, "This is a difficult start to 2021 for everyone, and a third lockdown would be very hard for businesses, which have already been facing significant challenges for many months. We are pleased that the government has listened to calls for greater financial support for businesses, and action from the Chancellor followed swiftly. But this must be reviewed again if the national lockdown is extended. Of course, we hope the situation will improve with time as the vaccination programme accelerates, and we encourage everyone to support their local businesses where they can." Right, a quick rundown of what follows. We start with the death notices. Then we have Christian comment, followed by letters to the editor. Chronicle comment, opinion by Khalid Aziz, Belgarum historical items and lighting up times. So the death notices. Aldborough, Patricia Aldborough, 18th of December, aged 87.
Blake, Anthony Blake, known as Tony, on the 17th of December, aged 83.
Butler, June Butler, 11th of December, aged 85.
Chapman, Janet Monica Chapman, the 8th of December, aged 80.
Chapman, Valerie Chapman, on the 8th of December, aged 85.
Dawson, Glenn Ross Dawson, known as Hank, on the 20th of December.
Gibbs, David Gibbs, 18th of December, aged 88.
Houghton, Eric Houghton, on the 22nd of December, aged 54.
North, George Clifford North, known as Cliff, 26th of December, aged 85.
Simpson, Albert Eric Simpson, on the 14th of December, at home in Devon.
South, Sheila South, née Taylor, 10th of December.
And Webb, Lee St. John Webb, on the 24th of December, aged 82.
Now we have Christian comment, please, Richard.
And it's entitled Holding Fast, and comes from Nigel Hemming, who is senior pastor at the Winchester Vineyard Church. In the history of seafaring, a sailor would often tattoo the phrase "hold fast" across his knuckles to bring good luck. In the middle of a storm, the deckhand's role was to grip the heavy ropes and literally hold them fast, no matter what, until the storm had passed. The lives of everyone on the ship depended on it, and the tattoos were a lucky charm to help. More generally, the term has now come to mean holding something securely, maintaining your position or not wavering from personal beliefs or convictions despite external pressure. At the start of 2021, it feels like we are in the middle of a storm and holding fast seems a necessity. 2020 was challenging enough and the disruption to Christmas incredibly disappointing. The last thing most of us feel we need right now is another lockdown, and yet here we are again with virus numbers climbing and schools closed. The cold weather just seems to add to the heavy sense of resignation. As my teenager might say, I'm just so over COVID. If the vaccine can meet all the expectations placed on it, then better days are not too far away, and I'm incredibly thankful for those who've developed it so quickly. But ultimately, my hope goes way beyond a vaccine. For many years, I've chosen to focus my hope on God, on his character, his steadfastness, and the peace which he can bring. That can look as simple as a faltered one-line prayer or quietly repeating over a few words from the Bible. The Bible captures this beautifully and succinctly in the letter to the Hebrews. Let us hold fast the confession of our hope without wavering, for he who promised is faithful. Hebrews 10:23. When it feels like everything around me is changing, I choose to put my trust in the one who never changes. In times of great uncertainty, it is God who can keep me afloat. Often it starts with an act of faith, choosing to trust when I can't see what's coming next. But of course, it wouldn't be faith if we knew what was just around the corner. Hebrews continues, faith is confidence in what we hope for and assurance about what we do not see. Hebrews 11:1. Just like those sailors holding onto their ropes for dear life, I have no idea when this particular storm will be over, but it will end at some point. No faith journey feels easy when we're right in the middle of it, but I know from experience that choosing to hold fast to God through the storms of lockdown will ultimately produce greater character and bring about a closer friendship with Jesus. And however difficult things may get, that has to remain my ultimate goal.
Thank you, Richard. Now we go on to letters to the editor. A mixed bag of letters this week, and I'm not sure that any of them are about COVID, but I might have got that wrong. Anyway, the first letter is headed Cycle Progress, and it's written by Jeremy Mortimer. Sir, over the last 20 years or so, Winchester has not seen any meaningful addition to its cycling infrastructure. Indeed, in that time, provision has steadily got worse, with the removal of cycle parking places, the adverse impacts of changes to the one-way system, and more recently, narrowing of roads to accommodate social distancing. It would have been nice to have celebrated the arrival of the cycle link between Durnham Road and the new leisure centre as a positive improvement. Unfortunately, the scheme is flawed in its design, incorporating a number of textbook examples of how not to construct good cycle infrastructure. It has all the hallmarks of someone, presumably not a cyclist, determined to provide a scheme with an unsuitable location so that a cycling access provided tick box could be ticked. The outcome was never going to be great. Sadly, no one seems to have been brave enough to question or stop the scheme. The general principles of designing cycle routes are that they should be coherent, direct, safe, comfortable and attractive. This scheme fails on most of these criteria. Particular low points include short sections of shared pavements. One at barely 3 metres long should get an award for its brevity. A risky and unnecessary road crossing that is both near a junction and on a bend, a 90-degree bend followed by a 180-degree turn, tricky to actually cycle around, finished by a row of low-level posts to catch the unwary. Part of this is a narrow shared walkway with which could bring cyclists into conflict with pedestrians, who are more likely to use this route. However, the good news is that in practice, conflict may be minimal, as the link is not especially useful for bike journeys in any case. Chiswell Street will be the more direct and accessible route for most journeys by bike. This is a good example of taxpayers' money being spent on something that managed to be both badly designed and not particularly useful. Please, can we have some useful and well-thought-out schemes for Winchester's cyclists? That letter was written by Jeremy Mortimer, Harrow Down, Badger Farm, Winchester.
And Gary Honey is also unhappy about a planning decision, the A31 lorry stack on this occasion. Sir, now the contraflow system is in place on one carriageway of the A31 between Alresford and Winchester, it is obvious that this is a wholly inappropriate site for a lorry park. Presumably the location was chosen by central government to alleviate commercial traffic congestion in Portsmouth, caused by Brexit bureaucracy from the 1st of January 2021. I suspect local authorities had as much say as local residents. From a safety perspective, this is worse than a smart motorway. In case of breakdown, motorists are told to wait for a recovery vehicle, but apart from none in the vicinity, there's no obvious way for them to reach any stopped car within the contraflow. This has all the hallmarks of an accident looking for somewhere to happen. Do we even have an end date for this inconvenience? Why wasn't a section of the M27 used instead of the A31? Gary Honey, Northbrook Avenue, St Giles Hill, Winchester.
This is a letter written by James Anderson, and it's headed Urban Sprawl. Sir, it is easy to expand an economy simply by increasing its population. A supply of people on low wages who are dependent on social housing is sufficient. Unfortunately, that does not improve personal wealth, but it does further ration our environmental pleasures, a fair description of the UK over the last 20 years. To improve personal well-being, it is productivity and not population that must expand, and the incentive for business to do it is a shortage of low-wage labour. Yet our rulers continue to pile in the people. If I want to live in the south, then a house will be provided. Winchester is to have more jobs. More houses, says MP Steve Bryan, unaware that what he advocates will result in relative decline. His party talks of incentivising productivity while following policies that have the opposite effect. Lib Dems are signed up to this approach, while the Conservatives are a confused and divided house. No pun intended. Conservative Caroline Horrell confirms that Winchester City Council's policy originated with the Conservative group. She's been egged on by the South Wanston Parish Council to bust the green local plan and build on a green field, in the face of parish opposition. In contrast, Jane Warwick is adamant that development should be brownfield. That's Chronicle Letters, December the 31st. Number 10 Downing Street has revealed it's solidly social democrat and determined to urbanise the South to rival Greater Los Angeles. In short, the plan is to make Winchester larger, much larger. Does the Winchester electorate want a Greater Winchester? Or were they indeed ever asked the question? And if greater, how much greater? Certainly, the Winchester City Council electorate does not have a ballot box option to that effect in the coming May elections. That was written by James Anderson, Wrights Close, South Wanston.
And in a not dissimilar vein, I have a letter entitled Build Back Better. We know from x-rays of old master paintings that in many cases the composition had been changed by the artist, sometimes quite drastically, in their endeavour for perfection. This is in imitation of nature, the supreme master artist, the all-pervasive universal intelligence, which has periodically become dissatisfied with its creative formation on Earth and, in particular, humans. In ancient, less technological times, people rightly felt part of the natural world and indeed the extrasensory world. These times produced some exceptional, super-sensitive individuals, so much so that they were able to prophesy events of a far future age that would reset humanity's evolutionary tendency to accord with the disposition of nature. These predictions had to allude to technologies yet to be developed, and much of their writings used figurative language that the reader has to decipher. Perhaps that future age is now. Isaiah 46:11, calling a bird of prey from the east. COVID-19. And Isaiah 42:15, I will lay waste the mountains and hills, and I will dry up the pools. Literal. Isaiah also records why he thinks the current calamities befalling humanity are happening and the eventual outcome, a world of collaboration, harmony with nature and fairness. Our collective New Year's resolution needs to be to build back better in all regards. And that from Jeff Naylor, Birch Close, Colden Common.
The next letter is written by T.C. Dunlop and it's headed, Pavilion Project Must Be Completed. Sir, I was very saddened to see the recent stories regarding a seeming change of stance from the Winchester City Council in support of the Pavilion Project. This was supported by a fantastic community engagement group that raised hundreds of thousands of pounds through a mixture of local fundraising and national grant and fund application to enable provision of a replacement pavilion for the North Wall sports fields. The new pavilion project had the support of not only all the local sports teams that use the fields, but community groups such as Parkrun, Mothers and Toddler Group, local fitness businesses, as well as residents from across the district. Many people gave freely of their time and energy over the years to enable this project to get to this point, and it is madness to allow it to flounder now. Surely the council can get together with the trustees of the Pavilion Project team to ensure that the money they have raised and the skills and time they have devoted to this project are not wasted. From project managers to business leaders and architects, there is a huge amount of experience in that team that enabled the original design to be created and money raised to support the development of it. Surely we cannot see this wasted at the first hurdle. It cannot be beyond the wit of man, or the wider community team, to help get past these current hurdles and get the project back on track. I really hope Winchester City Council sits down with the community and the Pavilion project team to bring the project to completion. That was written by T.C. Dunlop of Swan Lane, Winchester.
Peter Rees is feeling a little splenetic about green waste bins. Sir, perusing various media outlets and the City Council website to get some information about the proposed green waste collection bins, I was surprised by the immense lack of hard information about exactly why we are to have this inflicted upon us by the LibCon Dems. Every news outlet seems to shout that there is a significant increase in demand for increased green waste collection, but nowhere is there any hard evidence to substantiate this statement. Little evidence is provided that the green bag collection has been a complete failure, necessitating a very costly replacement. At the same time, I recall visiting the Chesil Tunnel and seeing thousands of council waste bins stored there. Inquiries to the council elicited no information whatsoever about what they are for, why they're not being used, and how much this is costing each year. Why are these not being used? This new scheme really is a giant Lib-Con-Dem-Con, proceeding with the local elections with glad tidings of green rubbish collection that will cost you more. They have the population over a barrel. What a time to start extracting extra money from council taxpayers as a demonstration of a prudent fiscal administration. Nowhere is there any evidence as to why this policy is necessary. Nobody has the information to support its introduction, and it's clearly not in the public realm. Another stunt by the LibCon Dems in the middle of a pandemic. I also see that they've abandoned local printers. Your glossy fairy tale newspaper from them is now printed in Dundee. This illustrates their complete lack of interest in supporting local print firms, both in Winchester and the surrounding areas. It's a travesty that struggling businesses in this area are being ignored and money is flowing into Scotland. Clearly they have no business in negotiating skills, and that would ensure the fairy tale newspapers are printed locally. I would welcome information about these fiascos. Peter Rees, a member of the Winchester Constituency Labour Party, Monarch Way, Winchester.
Now, this letter is written by Chris Wall and it's headed Steam Shame. Sir, it was a great shame after all the efforts of the Watercress Steam Railway volunteers that their Christmas steam illuminations had to be cancelled early due to the tier restrictions. We were particularly looking forward to it as my mother and father, Mike and Phyllis Norman, were enthusiastic Watercress Line volunteers for many years and Dad was a lifelong steam train enthusiast with a miniature track in his loft, who died on December the 28th, 2009 from a heart attack, poignantly on a train platform in Spites, Switzerland, pursuing a Christmas and New Year train trip around the Swiss mountains. When I saw the steam illuminations advertised, we immediately booked a trip, including afternoon tea, in memory of my parents and particularly my father, who died in this week in 2009. And were naturally disappointed when it was cancelled. We have done some other trips, including the beer and dinner trips in the past, which have always been excellent. It occurred to me that some of the people who were looking forward to this might be prepared to donate some or all of their refund to enabling the Watercress Line to survive these torrid times and hopefully do something similar next year. Here's hoping for a healthier, safer new year for all. That was written by Chris Wall, Frampton Way, Kingsworthy.
This letter is headed Voucher Support. Sir, I'm a pensioner with money put by for enjoying my retirement, but under COVID restrictions, with few places to go and spend it in, places such as entertainment and hospitality venues, the very places which need financial support right now. If I was able to purchase vouchers now for places and businesses I should enjoy visiting when restrictions are over, that might just help some of these businesses stay afloat. It could be up to individual businesses to offer their own voucher scheme, but it might be possible for this to be a national voucher scheme where, for example, I might buy £100 or more worth of vouchers, which could be used to support those businesses across the board who enter the voucher scheme and receive support. Such a scheme might ease the pressure on government financial support while enabling hard-pressed businesses to keep their noses above water. Just a thought. Dave Alderson, Cherry Close, South Wanston.
Geoffrey Moody writes, "Good news, sir. You previously published my letter encouraging more good news correspondence in your reader's letter section. My request has been self-fulfilling, as my elder son, living in Winchester and aware of my liking for the Hampshire Chronicle, has arranged an annual subscription to your esteemed publication. As an ex-resident of the city, but still a Wintonian at heart, this surprise birthday present is indeed good news." That was written by Geoffrey Moody, Harrietsham, Kent.
This letter, called Onwards, comes from Mark Rowe, who describes himself as proud Wintonian and English Democrats volunteer branch chairman. "Me and my family would like to wish everyone a happy new year for 2021. Let 2021 be a new year of strength and communities that we all help each other. A year where we learn new skills and protect old beliefs. A year to make England great again. My politics is the English Democrats, and we welcome anyone to join our party. Just look at the party website. We also respect others' political and encourage debate. A year of faith and promise where there will be challenges for us to overcome. A year where I thank everyone who has supported me during my life and I help them. A year where the Hampshire Chronicle will showcase Hampshire at its best. I thank my fellow readers, and may the Chronicle go from strength to strength. Take care all and stay safe. Mark Rowe, Taplin's Close."
This letter is written by Louis Gravely, and it's headed Bushfield Camp. "Sir, I was dismayed to see a photo of Bushfield Camp accompanying the letter from Jan Warwick," that's chronicled December the 31st. "While I am fervently against any development of the nature of Royal Down, we need to be wary of automatically assuming that it is better to build on brownfield sites. Each site needs to be looked at on its merits. Bushfield Camp and the neighbouring Bushfield Down, which I should say is derelict downland and not a brownfield site, remain incredibly important open green spaces for local people. Both areas hold a vast array of wildlife, including birds, glowworms, rare butterflies, slow worms and wild flowers. They are also important for bees and other pollinating insects. The biodiversity would far outstrip a similar area of conventionally farmed arable land. Sadly, there are already well-developed plans to use the camp itself for light industry, so it won't be providing any housing." And that was written by Louis Gravely of Farrowfield, Badger Farm, Winchester. Right, that's the end of the letters for this week. And actually, I was correct. There were none about COVID, which is amazing. Now, if you have an opinion or a subject you'd like to air in the Hampshire Chronicle, you can contact them on 01962 860836. That is 01962 860836. Or you can email them on news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, or you could write to the letter to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. And now we move on to the editorial comment from the Hampshire Chronicle,
which concerns the needs of schools. "The return of a third lockdown is obviously the right thing to do, but it has highlighted one of the most worrying aspects of the whole crisis, and that is the impact on education, especially at primary and secondary level. The confusion over whether schools could or should reopen has masked the fact that children's education is being seriously affected. The issue of distance learning and staying at home has highlighted the fact that for the poorest people, this is not an option. There are families who do not have laptops or even internet access. There are people who live in places where broadband connections are too slow to properly access online learning. In a nutshell, these families are being starved of an education. Addressing and mitigating these issues should be a government priority to ensure that the loss of a year's education does not impact on boys and girls for a lifetime. But, trying to look positively, unlike the first lockdown in the spring, there is a sense of certainty that there is light at the end of the tunnel when enough people will be vaccinated for things to get back to something like normal. Can you remember what normal looked like, Peter?
I don't think I can, Richard. No.
A long time ago now.
It was. Right, well, thank you for the editorial comment. We now move on to the opinion piece, which is written this week by Khalid Aziz, and it's headed Fingers Out, Needles In. So here we are, 2021. I wonder if, like me, when at the gate of the year you didn't linger too long to chat to the man who stood there. I couldn't wait to rush through and slam the gate firmly shut on such a grisly year. As for a light, we already had one. The glimmer, no gleam, of hope was already there in the shape of not one, but at least two efficacious vaccines to help us tread safely into the unknown of 2021. Mind you, the new vaccines have had the shine rather taken off them, as this damned virus has insisted on mutating into a version which is 70% more infectious. Transmissibility must surely be an early entry into the 2021 chart of new words. What it means is that you can now have a race against time. Do you get vaccination first or the infection? There can be few flat earthers left now who insist that it's all a fake news hoax. The evidence is there for all to see, and like cancer, there are few who haven't now been touched in some way or another. The planned easing up of restrictions over Christmas was either due to prudence or yet another incompetent U-turn, depending on your view of our government, was pared down to just Christmas Day itself. Even that didn't stop a brother-in-law, having a customary generosity, treated his whole family to a slap-up festive lunch at a Swiss restaurant, seeing all nine of them testing positive for COVID as one by one they started to succumb to symptoms. So far, none of them is too serious. Let's hope it stays that way. As the virus was stabbing the vitals of my family, the Queen managed to strike just the right note in her Christmas message. One of the best of her reign, it combined empathy with hope. The progress of the pandemics had become akin to watching a football game between two sides of equal ability. So far, the virus seems to be winning, with the daily numbers set to exceed the first peak back in the spring. However, there are early reports of people we know in the health service already receiving their first dose. This week, we should see a significant ramping up of the programme as the Oxford vaccine, happy to be carted around in a normal fridge temperatures, and starts to roll out. But here's the thing as we go into another prolonged lockdown. Why are we just relying on the health service to get this done, when getting this jollop into the arm of as much of the population as possible is vital? Every soldier is taught how to administer morphine in the field of a wounded comrade. This usually involves an injection in the thigh. Now, it's not beyond a squaddie's wit to be taught to do it in the arm instead. Granted, you had to be taught how to avoid injecting a bubble of air, which could really spoil your day. But it shouldn't take too long. The boss of AstraZeneca has repeatedly said vaccine supplies are not a problem, so why not quickly train the armed services and an additional army of volunteers? That way we can easily top the current target of 2 million doses administered per week. According to an online calculator, even at my advanced years, it may well be the end of June before I have had both doses. We can and should do better. Finally, to any anti-vaxxers out there, I can do no better than to channel a message from the previous pandemic. Don't die of ignorance. Right, on to Belgarum, which gives us an alternative view of the news. There are four items, starting with Richard reading one, please.
And this one's headed, Work on the Weirs. It looks exactly like it did a few months back. And that's the point. The much-loved walkway along the Weirs in Winchester has been restored in a project lasting around 6 months and costing £272,000. The promenade that dates back to Victorian times is now good for another 50 years or so after contractors removed the deteriorating banking and inserted new timbers and fencing. Some of the deterioration has been caused by flooding.
Now, the second item is New Year Challenge for Group. Belgarum has seen that a Winchester-based multi-award-winning theatre company is celebrating its 40th anniversary. But Encore Youth Theatre is not taking any time to celebrate the milestone. Instead, members are crowdfunding for one of the biggest and most exciting projects they have ever undertaken. They will need to raise £5,000 to support their new way of working for this year. The company will devise, write and produce an original performance, Dark and Bright. The cast, made up of 28 young people aged 11 to 19, will be working alongside former Encore members, who are now performing arts professionals, to bring the show to the stage of the Theatre Royal Winchester in 2021. Artistic director and writer of the show, Noel Jones, said, "It has remained imperative to us that we continue providing our much-needed service to our cast and crew, while simultaneously finding new ways to alleviate the financial pressures that we are facing this year. Making our own show gives our members the unique experience of being involved in the whole creative process, from initial concept to realisation on stage. Working with our professional creative team, including composer Will Pickering and lyricists Hannah Castleman and Julian Payne, allows them the opportunity to have their voices heard about things that have affected them during the lockdown, such as feelings of isolation."
And Victory's medical cabinet is for sale. The medicine cabinet that belonged to Lord Nelson's surgeon, Sir William Beattie, who attended him as he died, has emerged for sale in the New Forest. It's dated 1803, just 2 years before the Battle of Trafalgar, during which Nelson was fatally shot on board his flagship HMS Victory. And Charles Walrock, who runs Wick Antiques in Lymington, has put it up for sale. Sir William was unable to save Nelson, who died knowing that his forces had defeated the combined French and Spanish fleets. The cabinet would have contained a variety of tinctures, from laudanum to cures for venereal disease. Mr. Walrock said, "This is a wonderful survivor from the Napoleonic Wars. It's dated 1803, so it's very likely it was on board the Victory at Trafalgar. The case is portable with a handle on top, so Beattie was able to carry it around. On it is written his details. William Beattie, Warranted Surgeon, RN 1803. Beattie was with Nelson from when he was brought down below docks after being shot to when he died. Both Nelson and Beattie knew there was no hope of survival. The surgeon wrote a detailed account of what happened and insisted that Nelson's final words were, 'Thank God I have done my duty.' He added, 'This cabinet would have been full of tinctures, potions and medicines. It's a fascinating glimpse into the past, not only of naval history, but medical history.' Beattie was an Irish surgeon who rose through the ranks and served on a number of ships before becoming the surgeon on Victory just over a year before Trafalgar. He went on to become physician of the Channel Fleet and was active in promoting the new vaccine against smallpox. He served on the committee that organised the building of Nelson's Column and remained an important member of London's scientific community. He died in 1842, aged 68. The cabinet has an asking price of £16,500 and is for sale on the website called Two Covet. That's figure two, C-O-V-E-T, Covet.
And the last of these four items from Belgarum is headed Lost Items at City Hotel. Where would you find a 6-foot wedding cake made of cheese? Two kittens called Ronald and MacDonald, 10 mannequins with wigs, and a model of the town centre. Well, Winchester Travel Lodge's Lost and Found office, of course. Belgarum was surprised to see such a mixed bag of items, all of which have been left at the City Centre Hotel throughout 2020. These included a jewellery chest, a brand new Burberry trench coat, a 6-foot wedding cake made from different cheeses, a doctor's bag filled with diagnostic equipment, a Merry Christmas LED lights sign, two Bengal kittens called Ronald and MacDonald, a bright pink hard hat and a pink high-vis coat, 10 head mannequins with multicolour wigs on, and a model of Winchester Town Centre, and a case of vintage port. Shakila Almed, a Travel Lodge spokesman, said, "With millions of customers annually staying at our 563 UK hotels, we do get a range of interesting items left behind. Interestingly, as we kept some of our hotels open during both lockdowns to support local communities and provide accommodation for key workers, local authorities and for businesses that could travel for work, we have seen a rise in items being left behind by medical professionals." So those were our regular weekly features. Before we move on to the general news, I know that many of you are eagerly awaiting for the lighting up times. This week, the sun, if there is any sun, will rise at about 7:30 a.m. and might set at about 5 p.m. Now, on to items of general news. Richard, starting us off, please.
Yes, and a rather sad item here about a woman, 35, who admits baby poisoning. A healthcare worker has admitted poisoning a baby at hospital and making it considerably ill. The woman, 35, admitted administering a poison or other noxious substance to the four-month-old with intent. Hampshire Hospital's NHS Foundation Trust employee appeared at Southampton Crown Court for sentencing. She admitted that over a three-month period she unlawfully and maliciously administered lactulose with intent to injure, aggrieve or annoy. The infant was first submitted to Basingstoke Hospital with diarrhoea symptoms last year. The child was then transferred to Southampton, where they underwent a number of intrusive procedures in an effort to resolve the symptoms. The hospital arranged to undertake some stool tests in September, which revealed that lactulose, medication used to treat constipation, was present in the stools at a concentration 100 times higher and would be expected naturally. Lactulose is a powerful laxative available from pharmacies, and WhatsApp messages verified the woman had purchased the laxative. The specialist who treated the child reports that the baby is unlikely to have long-term physical health problems, but that should not diminish the recognition of the significant harm they suffered for many months. The Crown Prosecution Service noted that the woman's medical records indicated hypochondria, a condition in which a person is excessively and unduly worried about having a serious illness. It was also noted that she displayed attention-seeking tendencies. The prosecution accepted the woman did not intend to cause permanent injury to the child, but that she said she did intend to cause sufficient effects by prolonging diarrhoea that would cause the infant to remain hospitalised. Judge Peter Henry sentenced her to 12 months in prison, suspended for 2 years, and ordered her to complete 150 hours of unpaid work. Strange.
Yeah. Treasured Austin family heirloom returns home. Chawton House has acquired a rare first edition of Jane Austen's favourite poet, William Cowper's, poems. The copy that was in her brother's library and which she repeatedly visited. Thanks to the generosity of the Friends of Natural Libraries and the Godsamer Lost Sheep Society, Chawton House has received a rare first edition of William Cowper's poems published in 1782, which once belonged to Jane Austen's brother, Edward Austen Knight, and very likely read by Austen herself during a visit to her brother's Kent estate. Jane Austen visited her brother at Godsamer Park on six occasions over a 15-year period, from 1798 to 1813, staying there for a total of about 10 months. She regularly used the library, her favourite room. "I am now alone in the library," she wrote to Cassandra in 1813, "mistress of all I survey." Jane was given a home at Chawton Cottage in the grounds of Chawton House with her mother and sister in 1809 by her brother Edward, who took the name of Knight and had inherited the estates of Chawton in Hampshire and Godsmersham Park. Sorry about that. Of the acquisition, Chawton House's chief executive, Katie Child, said, "Knowing how much Jane Austen loved the library at Godsmersham Park, and how highly she valued Cowper's work, I find it difficult to imagine that she would not have turned through the pages of this set while staying with her brother. It has been carefully read and numerous passages marked, especially in the poems quoted by Austen, though presumably not by Austen herself."
A pandemic project looks back after huge success. A movement which has seen neighbours not only help each other in a time of crisis, but also get to know each other, has looked back on the work it has done since the start of the pandemic. Winchester Mutual Aid was formed in March on Facebook at the start of the COVID crisis and has now gone on to appoint area leads, with thousands of people getting involved with the group. One of five coordinators, Marianne Foster, said, "What we've seen over the past few months, these amazing relationships have been developed through people who live near one another, people who would never have known each other. The vulnerable and elderly now have a connection with people that weren't there previously. It's the relationships building and neighbourliness that we have seen has been the most encouraging thing. Now people are getting on and helping one another." Since it was launched, people have offered to carry out a wealth of jobs, from delivering meals, getting shopping, doing lifts, and even taking urine samples to GP surgeries. The group has also referred people to Hampshire County Council who needed extra support that was not in place. Coordinators have been working with food banks as they have come across people who were not eating. Members of Winchester Mutual Aid have been working alongside Winchester City Council's wellbeing team. "I sit on that round table now and work with other agencies and groups who are helping people locally," said Marianne. Winchester City Council have said that they have received hardly any requests from the community. "We really feel that this is wonderful. There is a view that people don't know who lives next door. In a time of crisis and disaster, the narrative is usually people descend into chaos. That's not true. It's not just Mutual Aid there. All sorts of organisations that have done that as well. I think that will last, not something that will go away. People will still look out for one another."
District heroes named in Queen's Honours List. They are the Hampshire heroes who have been recognised for their efforts. The 2021 list of New Year's honours has been released, and it features 12 Hampshire residents. Whether it is in the field of health, media or community service, they have all played their part, especially in what has been a very difficult year. They are: Vivian Loveday, 75, of Bishop Waltham, is awarded the British Empire Medal for services to the community. For the past 40 years, she has run the Bishop Waltham Gateway Club, which helps people with learning disabilities take part in leisure, social and creative activities. Then we have Merv Rees, pioneering liver cancer surgeon, has been recognised in the Queen's New Year's Honours by being awarded an OBE. The world-renowned Hampshire Hospital's NHS Foundation Trust surgeon, who created a trailblazing liver surgery team in Basingstoke, has been honoured for his services to liver cancer surgery. Commander of the Order of the British Empire, CBE, Margaret Adela Miriam Carver, for services to sport and to the media sector. CBE Professor Greta Westwood, Chief Executive of the Florence Nightingale Foundation, for services to nursing and midwifery. Order of the British Empire, the OBE. Professor James David Forbes Calder, TD, Professor, Department of Bioengineering, Imperial College London, for services to sport and to exercise. The OBE goes to Gavin John Edgley Harris, Director of the Gurkha Museum, for services to Gurkha and military heritage. Dr. Edgar Joseph Furchtwanger, historian, for services to Anglo-German understanding and history. Mirrid Rees, consultant, general, and hepatobiliary, I think that is, surgeon. Hampshire Hospital's NHS Foundation for services liver cancer surgery. Philippa Maria Spencer, senior principal statistician, Defence Science and Technology Laboratory, for services to defence, particularly during the COVID-19 response. And now, member of the Most Excellent Order of the British Empire, MBE, Christine Dominique Beresford, Chair of the Trustees of Whitchurch Silk Mill Trust and Winchester Military Museum, for services to cultural heritage in Hampshire. The MBE also goes to Richard Hugh Osgood, Senior Archaeologist, Defence Infrastructure Organisation, for services to defence and to heritage. And finally, the MBE goes to James Russell Gouldy, Supply Chain Director for England, Scotland, Wales and Northern Ireland, Biddeford, for services to the vulnerable during the COVID-19 response.
The gates that will save the city from flooding. Many people will say they're ugly. But in a wet winter, as the water levels rise, they may be thankful these new shiny gates are there. The City Council has just completed a £1.6 million scheme for flood defence work in the city centre. These gates are on the Itchen streams at Derngate and are designed to block high water levels coming into the city. They will allow the water levels to be better controlled, giving more flexibility to the emergency managers trying to prevent a major inundation, as nearly happened 7 years ago. The scheme stems back to 2014, when the city came close to disaster from flooding. Only the deliberate flooding of fields upstream at Easton to ease the pressure downstream stopped the city centre from being inundated. The Royal Engineers also put down temporary barriers at North Walls Park, Park Avenue and along North Walls to keep the floodwater back. The climate crisis means that extreme weather events will become more common. A City Council spokesman said, "The Derngate flood alleviation scheme was completed on schedule and the system will be in play as soon as Hampshire County Council has granted the permission for it to be used, a formality in the planning process. The scheme provides three new sluice gates on the remaining uncontrolled channels of River Itchen. It completes the network of defences across the north of the city to help control flooding, including the historic City Mill."
The A303 asylum seekers' site, a misguided plan, says MP. A Rumsey MP has slammed the Home Office's proposed centre for asylum seekers in Hampshire next to the A303 after a pedestrian was killed on the road. A 53-year-old man was found on the major road near Picket 20 after police were called at 2:27 a.m. on Tuesday, December the 22nd. Officers investigating the case believed that a large goods vehicle was in collision with the man and did not stop. As reported, Romsey and Southampton North MP Caroline Noakes started a joint petition against the plan for a temporary facility for up to 500 people on Ministry of Defence land at Barton Stacey, which has already attracted more than 3,000 signatures. Now the MP is shocked the Home Office appears to be oblivious to the need to consider asylum seekers' safety. Claimed the department had not informed Highways England about their plans until last week. Ms Noakes said, following the tragic accident on the A303 slip road at Pekin 20, I have contacted Highways England, asking for their reaction to the Home Office's misguided plan to locate an asylum camp on a similar slip road at nearby Barton Stacey. The tragic death of a pedestrian has reminded us all just how dangerous this road is, and I am shocked that the Home Office appears oblivious to the need to consider not only the safety of any asylum seekers placed at the camp, but also the safety of road users on this busy dual carriageway. She added, as of 2 weeks ago, the Home Office had not even informed Highways England about their plans, let alone formally consulted with the highway's safety implications. A spokesperson for the Home Office said, we are required by law to provide asylum seekers with suitable accommodation, and during the pandemic, we have had to secure additional sites. We will work with the community to ensure any impacts are addressed. They added, we are fixing our broken asylum system to make it firm and fair, and will be bringing forward legislation in the new year.
And back to the A31. Brexit lorry park opens. The emergency lorry park on the A31 near Winchester has so far seen little use. The measure was introduced this month in case backlogs of HGVs developed at Portsmouth Ferry Port in the event of a no-deal Brexit. Officials will ensure all EU-bound freight has the correct border-ready paperwork. The lorry park is on the westbound A31 dual carriageway, whilst the usual traffic is put on a contraflow eastbound with a 30-mile-an-hour limit. A spokesperson for Hampshire County Council said on Tuesday, around 30 lorries have been processed through that point so far since New Year, which has been, as expected, a quiet time of year for freight. The A31 triage point is part of an overall Hampshire and Isle of Wight local resilience forum plan, which involves a number of agencies, including Portsmouth City Council and Portsmouth International Port. The lorry park is designed to cater for up to 235 vehicles a day. There are more than a dozen portable toilets along its length, as well as catering facilities and a 24-hour-a-day police and vehicle recovery presence. Chief Fire Officer Neil Odin said, we've planned for the worst case but are hoping for the best. As well as the changes for hauliers as a result of leaving the EU, we are faced with a unique set of circumstances, including reduced travel due to COVID-19. Demand in the early days is projected to be lower, but we expect that that will grow and we need to be ready for it.
Top officer failed to manage top unit. The commanding officer of a toxic specialist police unit accepts that his failings of management helped lead to the discriminatory atmosphere that had developed amongst his officers, a tribunal has heard. Six police officers could face the sack after being found to have committed gross misconduct after they were recorded making abhorrent comments whilst working at Hampshire Police's Serious Organised Crime Unit office in Basingstoke. The officers were recorded by a bugging device making abhorrent racist, sexist, homophobic and other inappropriate comments. Retired Detective Inspector Tim Arison, Detective Sergeant Oliver Large, Detective Sergeant Gregory Wilcox, former PC Craig Bannerman, trainee Detective Constable Andrew Ferguson and PC James Oldfield have all been found to have breached professional standards at a disciplinary hearing. Mr. Arson and Detective Sergeant Wilcox were also accused at the tribunal of failing to fulfil their supervisory roles to stop or report the inappropriate behaviour. The panel is now sitting to determine what sanction the officers should face, with dismissal an option for gross misconduct, which they have all found to have committed. Luke Ponte, representing Mr. Ireson, said his client had not used discriminatory language but had used offensive language, such as swear word, which risked encouraging others to do the same. He added, "He was not himself a racist or sexist or phobic or a bully. He is not someone who would target the weak or the vulnerable or the different. He is not someone or was not an officer insensitive to the issues of diversity. A culture developed, and to an extent he allowed to develop in the office, and he accepts that it was caused in part by his failings of management. His intention was to permit a more relaxed atmosphere which he felt would sustain a cohesive and productive team. He now sees that too much allowance was given and boundaries became blurred." Edmund Gritt, representing Detective Sergeant Wilcox, says his client had given 27 years of service to Hampshire Police and had eliminated some of the most serious criminals in the county. He said that the 52-year-old wished to apologise to the people of Hampshire and added, "His failings in his own conduct gave rise to the environment. The only approach he should have adopted was a zero-tolerance approach, and that includes zero tolerance towards himself as well." Guy Ladenburg, representing Detective Sergeant Large, said there was no malicious intent behind teasing comments made towards the only black officer in the unit, and he had shown remorse for the reputational damage he caused the force.
Job losses as budget is cut. Winchester City Council is likely to cut jobs, services and more as its budget takes a huge hit from COVID. Its money for the next financial year is likely to be £3.7 million less than this year. While civic chiefs set a fully funded monetary plan in February 2020, the impact of the health crisis has seen significant additional costs as well as dramatic losses of income. Councillor Neil Cutler, deputy leader and cabinet member for finance, said, "Winchester City Council, like all local authorities, is facing significant budget pressures. Our budget for 21-22 assumes a potential reduction in income of 20%, but this could vary significantly depending on the pace of economic recovery and consumer confidence following the pandemic. This reduction in income will mean a £3 million reduction in operating costs and the use of some reserves to balance the budget. With careful management, we will continue to deliver the priorities within our council plan, addressing the climate emergency, ensuring delivery of services, and contributing to economic recovery." The council says its priorities set out in April 2020 remain unchanged. On December the 16th, the cabinet considered proposals for achieving a balanced budget for 21-22, and it will be set out in February 21.
Charlie wins Harry Potter Authors Contest. A pupil at Compton All Saints School has been recognised by J.K. Rowling. Charlie Fielder entered the author's illustration competition for the Ichabog, the book she published daily online during the first lockdown. Charlie's entry was one of 18,000 for the UK edition. He received a signed copy of the book and £500 worth of children's books to be donated either to a public or a school library. Fortunately for the school, he chose to donate them all to Compton All Saints. Head teacher Ali Driver said, "We are excited to have such a large and exciting set of new books to add to our library. There are hardbacks as well as paperbacks, which is lovely. We have been working on ways to use our library in a COVID-safe way, and this has given a real motivation boost for our next term." J.K. Rowling is most famously known as the author of the Harry Potter series, as well as Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them.
Empty offices converted to flats more than 100 times. Developers in Winchester have turned vacant offices into flats on more than 100 occasions in the last 5 years, but the City Council is standing by the need for workspaces. Winchester City Council is proposing to build office space as part of its Central Winchester Regeneration Scheme, also known as Silver Hill. However, new figures reveal that a number of empty workplaces are being bought by developers. Data from the Ministry of Housing, Communities and Local Government has highlighted that there were 116 office-to-residential conversions in Winchester in the 5 years to 2019-2020. Of those, 35 took place last year, while 2516 saw the highest number carried out over the period, 41. Councillor Kelsey Learney, Cabinet Member for Housing, said, "The way people work, the demand for employment spaces and patterns of work and home life is evolving, and the COVID-19 pandemic has been a force for rapid change. We're responding directly to these changes and looking to fill the gaps that exist in workspace provision across the district. In central Winchester, we're working closely with the city's two universities to create spaces that attract entrepreneurial graduates and start-ups. The proposed workspaces within the Central Winchester Regeneration site are creative, flexible, and designed to inspire enterprise and help new companies grow. They include areas where people can choose how much space they need, alongside flexible short-term leases that will open up opportunities for individuals and companies in the city that don't currently exist. Creating spaces where people want to work and where new businesses can help and support each other by sharing skills, ideas and resources is a crucial element of the proposals for the Central Winchester scheme. The council has also envisaged a major office development at Station Approach to broaden the city's economy.
Rotary surprises city care homes. Staff at six Winchester care homes received parcels of Christmas presents and treats provided and delivered by the city's Rotary branch. Each parcel contained a festive mix of boxes of biscuits, chocolates, mince pies, as well as soft drinks and clementines. They also contained bottles of Prosecco as a special surprise for the care home managers. During the COVID-19 pandemic, Rotary members have been supporting several care homes in the city through writing letters and cards to residents to help alleviate loneliness. David Farthing, scheme coordinator and a past president of Winchester Rotary, said, "As a result of our letter-writing scheme, we have become acutely aware of the immense pressure put upon care home staff during these unprecedented times. We decided, therefore, to provide some Christmas cheer for the hard-working staff. Deliveries were made to Westacre, Moorside, Berwick Court, Abbotsbarton, West Holme and Sutton Manor care homes." Lynn Seymour, general manager of Westacre Nursing Home, said, "It's heartening to see the hard work of the staff at Westacre recognised with such a thoughtful gesture. With the ongoing pandemic, it has been crucial to maintain a sense of community, and which the Rotary has been a valuable part of this. Our residents were delighted to receive letters from club members a few months back, and our staff are equally pleased to see that their efforts are appreciated. Winchester Rotary will continue to support local communities throughout lockdown."
And I think finally, Hannah wows Sir Tom Jones on TV. A Winchester University alumna has turned the heads of two star judges on hit TV singing show. Hannah Williams is competing on the latest series of The Voice UK. The 38-year-old has progressed from the blind auditions after impressing Ollie Mears and Sir Tom Jones, who both turned their chairs after hearing her voice. In the typical style of the show, Hannah was then asked who she wished to progress with. She chose to join Sir Tom Jones, with whom she will compete for a victory over a number of rounds. Hannah studied music theatre at the City Uni between 2003 and 2006. She was also director of Foundation Music, now the University of Winchester, Winchester Music Centre, after she graduated until a couple of years ago. She's still at the centre as a vocal consultant and teacher. Neil Valentine, creative director at the Music Centre, said, "We're thrilled for Hannah and so proud of her achievements. For years, she's been the driving force behind the excellent singing at the University of Winchester Music Centre by coaching, teaching and performing alongside our amazing students. She's an inspiration, and we are so excited to support her on The Voice UK.
Thank you, Richard. And though that was potentially the last news item, I have just come across this real bombshell of a news item. A bomb squad recovered a suspected grenade from Winchester city centre. The explosive was seen in the River Itchen off Bridge Street by a passerby. Police were called and set up a safety cordon. A bomb disposal team then disposed of the grenade. A spokesperson for Hampshire Police said, "We were called at 11:14 a.m. today, January the 31st, to the city bridge after a member of the public located what is believed to be a grenade in the water. Attending officers set up a cordon for safety. EOD attended and took the grenade to detonate and dispose of it safely."
Boom, boom.
Boom, boom. Well, hopefully not. Well, that concludes the Hampshire Chronicle extracts for this week. Just another reminder that Liz Legree is the person to call if you have any problems with your recording. A number again, 01962 861229. Many thanks to our copying, dispatch and memory stick preparation teams, and of course to our editors for this week, Liz and Gordon Legg. And of course, many thanks to Richard.
Goodbye.
Goodbye for joining me in presenting the Hampshire Chronicle this week. Now, when you finish recording, listening to the recording, please put the memory stick in the yellow envelope, also putting the address label inside the envelope, and pop it in the post, no stamp required. The address label will ensure it is returned to us at our new address in Twyford. Thank you. And so from me, Peter Lydiard, goodbye.